WCRS 102.1 98.3 with Bob Fetrakis and Harvey Wasserman and me, Connie Goodell Newton.
We're very privileged today. We've got Charlotte Dennett, Bennett with a D, who has written a book and poses the key question. Well, at least it's the key question recently in England and parts of Europe, but not here yet. But that's our job on WCRS. The question, should George W. Bush be indicted? And Charlotte, I take it the answer, because you wrote a book, is yes?
Yes. An affirmative yes.
Well, here's my problem is, it seems like you have a cafeteria or smorgasbord of what he could be indicted for. What does your book argue?
Well, my book, yes, you're right. There's so many things. And you know, more and more is coming out. For instance, just yesterday, there was a federal judge that ruled that the Bush administration had broken the law with illegally surveilling Americans without a search warrant. But that was not the primary focus of my book. My book focuses on Bush taking us to war on false pretenses, and I take up the argument that Vincent Bugliosi makes in his book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. I actually took up his challenge in that book, where he said, you know, we've got so much evidence, it's time we do something about it. And so I ran for attorney general in Vermont on a pledge. I ran on other things, but this is the one that, of course, grabbed the headlines, on a pledge to prosecute Bush for murder in the state of Vermont using state criminal courts. And so that was the primary focus of my race for attorney general. Then what happened, I lost. I was in a four-way race. I ran as a progressive. There was an entrenched incumbent, and I only had a month to run. But I got really hooked on this whole issue of accountability, partly because I got support from people all over the country. It was just amazing. So I felt like this had really touched a nerve, that people really felt this strongly. Impeachment had failed. Increasingly, people thought that prosecution would be the way to go. And so the whole second part of my book is actually my discovery of all these different groups and people that cared so much, which I've called, and I think others have called sort of informally, the accountability movement. And the huge issue, apart from the murder charge, is, of course, war crimes. In fact, there are a lot of people who feel more comfortable going after him on war crimes, but that, I think that's only because they don't really understand how the murder charge could actually be applied, which I'd be happy to tell you if you want to, but in any event, I cover both. So that's primarily it. It's the crimes of the top leadership of the Bush administration, and what I do is I tie in war crimes into murder, because as I lay out in the book, some of the early most heinous examples of torture, the waterboarding, for instance, of quote-unquote high-level detainees, was not done to get actionable intelligence. It was done to get these people to make false confessions. And the reason that the false confessions were that they were tied to Saddam Hussein and to Iraq, and that was served as a further false pretext to get us into war.
Based on the famous false thesis of Laurie Milroy, who I had the privilege of debating just prior to the war, you know, who claimed falsely that somehow Saddam had taken over Al-Qaeda. And we know that Saddam's only relation with Al-Qaeda is he imprisoned them, tortured them, and suppressed them, is that they hated each other. They were completely different movements. We also have Connie Goodell Newton here. Harvey's walked in, and Connie actually is familiar with violations of international law and human rights. Connie.
Yeah, I studied war crimes, and I had an internship at the ICTY working with the Office of the Prosecutor, prosecuting Perisic, General Perisic, and he, so it was the International Tribunal, Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. And one thing that I focused a lot on, and, you know, during that experience, I thought a lot about what was going in the going on in the United States with Bush, and, you know, could we possibly prosecute him? So it seems like jurisdiction is one of the main areas I would focus on, I guess, to see, you know, would it be possible to prosecute Bush? And it seemed like the United States, you know, individually, that they would have jurisdiction over Bush, but maybe it was the willingness and the political climate that was preventing people, preventing someone in the United States from prosecuting Bush. So did you, in your book, address jurisdiction over Bush?
I addressed it a lot, but I did it in a different sort of way. I mean, I did address, first of all, I said that the ideal place to prosecute Bush using U.S. law would be in the federal courts, but that because of the, it wasn't really so much a jurisdictional problem, it was, but again, I'm talking about murder here, not war crimes.
Okay.
But by the same token, Washington right now is still very politicized, and there are still a lot of Bush holdovers, and I think this has had a real impact, for instance, on Eric Holder's ability to dig as deeply as I think he would like to do. He did appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the CIA for its interrogation policies, which were not even authorized by the torture lawyers inside Bush's Department of Justice. So they must have been really bad. And he did appoint a special prosecutor, and that's ongoing. And, without political will, it won't go much farther than that. And that's one of the arguments I make in the book, is that there has to be political will to make this go, to proceed. And it is possible. But so anyway, what I did is I took up the argument that partly because it's so difficult on the federal level, there is the possibility of doing it on the state level. And that's where we pull in some really interesting legal theories. I'll just throw out a couple of them so that people understand that it's not as preposterous as it sounds.
Great, thank
and
you.
Particularly because, you know, Vermont never, Bush never stepped foot in Vermont. It's the only state. Maybe it's because the town of Brattleboro passed a resolution authorizing its sheriffs to arrest him if he did, which was only symbolic, but nonetheless, he knows that there's a huge animus against him in Vermont.
And Ben and Jerry and Bernie Sanders had a posse.
Ben and Jerry supported my campaign. They were all behind
way
it.
Way to go.
I think Bush is afraid of the fact that gay marriage is legal in Vermont.
Are you saying something? I can't hear you, what you're saying.
Oh, that's Harvey Wasserman.
Oh, okay. Well, just
is that it? Is that better?
There you go. That's what
Charlotte, I said that Bush is probably afraid to go into Vermont because gay marriage is legal there, and kind of makes him uncomfortable.
Yeah. He might catch it.
No, he knows that he's very unpopular here. There were two other things. We have town meeting, of course, up here, and some 37 towns voted to impeach. And even our own state legislature almost was able to pass a resolution in both houses, the Senate and the House, which, had it succeeded, it would have required the House of Representatives in D.C. to pursue impeachment. But then the Democratic Party leadership put the kibosh on it. And who was leading that but none other than our Senator Patrick Leahy of the
Bummer.
Senate Judiciary Committee.
So what is this state prosecution? You're saying you think a state...
All right, I'll give you just a couple of the outlines of how it could work. First of all, you've got the underlying crime of conspiracy, and the co-conspirators do not have to be at the place where the murder happened. All they have to do is to have a meeting and set in motion what's called an overt act that takes place in the state where you want jurisdiction to lie. And in this case, the argument is that Bush got on the television in October, I think it was October 10th, 2002, and he gave a speech which was full of lies about Saddam Hussein being an imminent threat to our nation. that went into the homes of Vermonters and convinced them to go to war. They were thinking that they were going to avenge, you know, the tragedy of 9/11 and that Saddam Hussein was responsible. So there's an overt act right there. Another one is just recruiting soldiers in Vermont. So that's one area under the conspiracy charge. And we all know that Bush did not act alone.
Great. We're going to break for a second just for a quick station ID.
Sure.
This is WCRS Community Radio, 98.3 Grandview, 102.1 Easton. This is Shoshi Wasserman.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, we're back on Community Radio. You were saying about why the president should, well, the former president George Bush should be an indicted co-conspirator.
Yeah.
And you're saying that a state could do it, one of the individual states.
Any state can do it as long as a soldier has died in the state. And then if it's, and that would be, you know, the attorney general would have jurisdiction, or any district attorney who has a soldier or more than one soldier who's died in his or her district or county could also do that. So, so that's one way you can do it. There's another thing called the effects doctrine, which is very similar. That is that, and it's well established in criminal law, as it is in civil law, that if an outside party causes harm inside the state, then jurisdiction applies to that state. And lastly, there's this notion that's very interesting that Cindy Sheehan picked up right away when she had a conversation with the famous prosecutor, Vincent Bugliosi. She had said to him, you know, it wasn't the Iraqi soldiers that killed my son, it was George Bush. And he said, well, you've got it, that's exactly true. Well, actually, there's a legal doctrine behind that, and it's called the doctrine of innocent agent. And that's when a party such as Bush, let's say Bush-Cheney, caused the invasion, the unlawful invasion of a country, and the people of that country fight back in self-defense and kill American soldiers, they are innocent agents. So they are not responsible for the death.
Have you got any, made any headway with this?
Have I made headway? Well, first of all, you know, headway in me prosecuting, no, because I lost the election. And it's kind of interesting because I figured as running as a progressive, I was probably one of the few people in the country that could have even raised the issue because the Democrats were not for this, I can tell you. I mean, they weren't for impeachment, so they were not going to get behind the idea of prosecuting. Then there was the whole issue of, like, what attorney general or DA is going to risk his or her job to, you know, stick their neck out and do this. But on the other hand, since I've done that, there's really been some really dramatic developments. And part of it has to do with some federal courts are now looking very sharply at what happened under the Bush administration. Holder has appointed a special prosecutor. You've got the Spanish who are conducting a criminal investigation in this country as we speak. They're using the doctrine of universal jurisdiction, and they can do that because Spanish citizens were tortured in Guantanamo. And so the very famous Spanish prosecutor, Baltazar Garzon, who was responsible for getting Pinochet arrested in his hospital bed in London, is now very hotly pursuing both the Bush lawyers, the torture lawyers, John Yoo and J.B. Bybee, and then and claiming that all the evidence leads right up to the top, to the White House. And they have made it very clear to Holder that if the U.S. doesn't do it, they will. And, you know, that sort of bugs people that it has to be Europeans that hold our government officials or former government officials accountable. But then there is also Vincent Bugliosi is still working on this issue, and he's making progress on it. So you just need to stay tuned and realize that you know, there are ups and downs in this battle, but they make mistakes. The bad guys don't always win. I mean, one of the classic mistakes is that they thought that the invasion of Iraq was a slam dunk. I mean, there's a huge mistake in planning right there. And I don't think we've heard the end of even going after the lawyers, you and Bybee. They got off with a slap on the wrist. But so much has been revealed about them that there's citizen efforts to get them, at the very least, disbarred. So anyway, you take the long view, and that's what I'm doing.
Great. So I bet a lot of our listeners are wondering, doesn't immunity apply to the president? And, you know, shouldn't a president be immune from suit if he sends soldiers to war? So is it possible to get around that, and how do you get around that?
Criminal. You file a criminal charge because there is no immunity. There is no immunity for murder. There's no immunity for war crimes. Those are criminal charges. It's only in civil cases where they can bring up the immunity defense. So Bush is going to have this hanging over his head for the rest of his life, as are Cheney, Rumsfeld, and the rest of them that were in that small circle of friends.
Well, Harvey and I have argued that in part this would be, again, restoring American values, because if you go back and look at things like the principles of Nuremberg, I mean, we hung Nazi generals for claiming that they could attack Poland and countries in Europe. It was clear that this was not a preemptive war, which is allowed by international law. Somebody's about to attack you. They attacked a country that was two-thirds of it was under a no-fly zone and was no threat to the United States. That's preventive war. Isn't that a clear violation? If we can't get them here, there's many countries in the world that have signed on to the UN Charter and could, in fact, get them for waging aggressive war. I mean, that's a crime. That's a war crime.
Well, actually, interestingly enough, aggressive war is still being debated in terms of establishing the exact elements under the International Criminal Court. In fact, there's going to be a conference coming up in Africa, I think it's this summer or the fall, where they're finally going to hash out. I mean, yeah, the Nuremberg principles did, in fact, establish the crime of aggressive war, but when it actually comes to enforcing it, they just haven't figured out all the elements. There's disagreements as to what is an aggressive war, so that has to be hashed out, and you're going to have delegates from all over the world meeting in some places like Kenya, I think. Once that's in place, then we'll see what happens. The other thing is that the United States is not party to the International Criminal Court. It did not join in the convention, the Rome Convention that created it. And so people should be putting pressure on Obama to say the time is now where you should be party to that, and we hope that that happens. Nonetheless, Francis Boyle, who is an international, teaches international law at the University of Chicago, has filed a complaint with the International Criminal Court, and this is against the Bush administration for the CIA rendition flights. And his argument is that as long as the victims were part of the Rome conference or convention that created the ICC, then jurisdiction applies, and the Bush administration can be prosecuted because of the victims are part of member nations. I don't know, but we don't know whether the court has accepted it. So
what is,
we're waiting to see.
Why has Obama been so hesitant, and who's really calling the shots? Is there somebody else in the administration that's preventing him from prosecuting these guys?
You betcha.
And
yep, and in fact, I named them in my book, The People versus Bush. Some of the key players have, one of them is a man by the name of John Brenner, who actually worked with the CIA under Bush and was very much responsible for implementing the torture policies at Abu Ghraib and elsewhere. And believe it or not, folks, probably people are a little bit more, cynical now, but having seen so many disappointments under the Obama administration, but it was quite shocking to us way back when he first came into office that he was considering this man to head up the CIA. And it was only because of a hue and cry by some human rights lawyers, including Glenn Greenwald, who former constitutional lawyer who writes for Salon.com. They raised such a hue and cry over this that Obama decided not to appoint him CIA, but Brenner is in charge of counterterrorism, and he has a huge role. He plays a huge role He tried to prevent the release of the so-called torture memos that happened in April 2009 that further showed that Bush's lawyers were deliberately breaking the law. They knew they were breaking the law. I'd like to use the slogan, "You knew." He knew exactly that he was covering up for his superiors and twisting the law to protect them. But in any event... I just lost my train of thought. Where were we?
Why is Obama not trying?
Oh, Brenner, yeah. So Brenner, I believe, played a role in refusing to have the torture videos released. And, of course, the argument was that it was going to hurt soldiers abroad. But, you know, they keep using that argument. That's not what they're worried about. They're worried about being prosecuted. I mean, they're playing a very interesting game, these former Bush administration officials. But anyway, Brenner is still in there.
Why? Why is he still in there?
Because Obama is not exactly what people think he is. Obama listens to the establishment.
Well, he also, didn't he work, according to Wayne Mattson, his job after Columbia was Business International Corporation, which was a CIA proprietary. Even though he went on to be a community activist, he also has ties to the security industrial complex.
Well, indeed. I point out in People versus Bush that Obama is quite beholden to the Trilateral Commission, which is the central wing, if you want to call it, of the ruling elites. And had it very much Rockefeller dominated, and I know this very well because my previous book was on Nelson Rockefeller with my co-authors, my husband Jerry Colby. So I discovered that Obama's biggest backer was Jay Rockefeller, a senator from West Virginia, and he threw huge fundraising parties, Obama came out of the University of Chicago, which was founded by the Rockefellers. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's just a Rockefeller stooge, but nonetheless, he was very much groomed for the position by these very powerful elites. And so it just stands to reason he's going to listen to them.
Well, is it just that they don't want the boat rocked? Is that why they don't want to go after Bush?
I think it's because they know that if one goes after Bush, it's going to set a precedent, and then they can't achieve their frankly imperial ends. And we've got to come to grips with the fact that we are an empire. And when you have 700 bases, now some people are saying there's 1,000 bases. We're the world's biggest superpower. We are an empire. And, it stands to reason that if we're this big of an empire, then the powers that be are going to want an emperor to run it. And I know that Obama certainly doesn't look that way, but in many respects, he was really the perfect choice in this period. Henry Kissinger was absolutely elated. He worked very closely with Nelson Rockefeller, and... he was overjoyed. He said, now we're going to have a new world order. And, you have a man who is very articulate, and because he's a black man, biracial, whatever, that the feeling was that was going to go over well with the rest of the world, which had become so turned off by what happened under Bush. And I think there was probably a feeling that Obama would toe the line, certainly on foreign affairs. And that seems to be the case. But now we're finding it in other areas, too. People are learning that, you know, he just allowed massive offshore drilling. And so, you know, it's...
And loans for nuclear plants.
Loans for nuclear plants. That's right.
And is not aggressively going after the Americans who were spied on without warrant, which was in the Times today, which you mentioned earlier. We're running out of time here. One more time, the name of the book.
Oh, the name of the book is The People Versus Bush, One Lawyer's Campaign to Bring the President to Justice, and the national grassroots movement she encounters along the way. My website is peoplevbush.com, all one word. People, you can find out all about my campaign and, you know, the book and so on. Reviews, et cetera.
Well, you're doing a great job with this. Well, it's something really needed to be done, so you're doing a great job with this.
All right.
Well, and by the way, I talk about Vermont Yankee, but we didn't get into it.
Well, another show. We'll have you back on.
okay.
And my daughter will once again do the station identification.
Charlotte.
Oh, wonderful.
Dennett. Charlotte Dennett.
Charlotte Dennett. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Okay, guys.
From Lush Liberal Vermont.
WCRS 102.1, 98.3.